the same story every time. I sheepishly appeared at dinner with my busted glasses on my face, thick wads of masking tape holding them together, and sat through dinner until my parents very patiently took me back to the same glasses store later that night to buy the same set of red plastic frames again and again and again. Now, my most painful memory of busting my specs came during a Little League soccer game. Almost everyone I knew played soccer as a kid, getting some exercise by joining historical local franchises such as Chesco's Produce and A&R Auto Body, established 1956. It was in my first and only season, in the middle of a big playoff game, when I unceremoniously took a well-booted ball to the middle of my face. My glasses cracked in two. I fell to the ground and started crying, and as the play raced on without a whistle, I slowly got my drippy self together and blindly crawled off the field. I held half my glasses in each hand and wore a big red circle on my face from the ball, like someone had set a frying pan on me, accidentally mistaking my round, childlike features for a tightly coiled stove burner. Well, I got to the sidelines and was met with bad news. Basically, the coach wouldn't let me off the field. See, the problem was that our team was already short players, and if I went off, we'd be disqualified. Remember, this was the playoffs here. A free pizza party and a round of root beer floats were on the line. Nobody wanted the game to end. So, completely blind, tears in my eyes, my bright red, well-smacked face on display for all to see, I stood in the corner of the field for the rest of the game, somehow helping our team avoid disqualification, as well as victory. It was tough. I remember the only thing that got me through that terrible ordeal was my mom coming over and setting up a lawn chair beside me, popping open a really, really old Tupperware container, and giving me all the orange slices I wanted from the halftime stash. And let me tell you, I loved me some halftime orange slices. They were like sweet liquid energy, filling me with sugar and pep and turbocharging me for the second half. Now, my showing that day was pathetic and humiliating. I don't deny that. And I'm sad to report that it finally forced me to hang up the cleats for good, retiring forever from the game I knew mildly. But I still remember those orange slices, and my mom generously thiefing the entire container so I could make it through the game. So thanks, Mom. And thanks, Halftime Orange Slices. You're both completely awesome.
Putting potato chips on a sandwich. Ever had a friend start buzzing with a dating glow? You know, they start seeing someone new and suddenly start walking with a new pep in their step, a new trot in their walk. Maybe they lose 5 pounds, show up with a new haircut, or start wearing tight pants. Or maybe they just smile wider, laugh louder, and blast out a new confidence about themselves. Being with someone new makes them look and feel better, and that's a great thing. That's the dating glow. Now, if you don't mind, let's sharply switch gears and talk about sandwiches. Soggy, squashed, saran-wrapped sandwiches from the bowels of your book bag. Those warm and tired messes look pathetic, with sweaty cheese, slimy tomatoes, and warm turkey. Yes, it's a sandwich down on its luck. Lacking a bit of confidence and in desperate need of a glow of some sort. That's where potato chips come in. When you crunch up your sandwich with some carefully inserted potato chips, you inject a spicy vial of grade A oomph. Suddenly, that pasty gob of bread and meat transforms into a rainbow of crunches and flavors. It's the sandwich equivalent of getting a new hairdo, wearing something scandalous, or buzzing with a new vibe. Now, before we call it a day here, let's chat about something funny about putting chips on a sandwich. Basically, here it is. Everybody thinks they invented it. Honestly, I'll be grabbing a quick lunch with a friend from work, and he'll just sort of raise his eyebrows at me mysteriously. "Know what I like to do?" he'll ask, squinting a bit and cracking a wry smile. "Put chips on my sandwich. That's what." He'll unveil a stiff bottom lip, some scrunched eyebrows, and a firm nod echoing the big reveal. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Pudding potato chips on a sandwich. You invented it. We all love it. Awesome.
When you didn't play the lottery, and your numbers didn't come up. I don't play the lottery very often, but when I do, I'm pretty sure I'm going to win. I take pains to ensure all my family's birthdays are evenly covered as I carefully color in the bubbles, and then hand my sheet to the convenience store cashier. Kicking cigarette butts and sucking on a popsicle while I walk home, my mind wanders off and begins wrestling with difficult questions I assume plague the rich. Pool or tennis court? Private jet or yacht? Tall, snooty butler with a thin mustache or fat, clumsy one with a heart of gold? And I think about whether I donate massive chunks of my riches to people who've done small, simple things for me when I was down on my luck. You know, $1 million tip for the coffee shop waitress who calls me hun. A new mansion for the guy who slices my cold cuts nice and thin. I toy with the idea of stashing my cash in a vault and swimming in it like Scrooge McDuck. Traveling around the world by unicorn or, possibly, just buying the internet. My mind entertains these wild dreams because being a dreamer is great fun. The thoughts are free, so I enjoy them on my way home, squeezing the ticket in my pocket, and then posting it on the fridge so I don't forget the big day. Yes, this little jackpot fantasy continues until the numbers are announced. And I don't win. No, I don't even have one number right. I'm not even close. I shouldn't have played. I just threw $3 away for no reason. But I guess that's why it's great when I don't play, and I check my numbers, and sure enough, they didn't come up. Now who's laughing? Me, the $3 richer guy. Awesome.
The smell of frying onions and garlic. The onion has a long and glorious past. For instance, get this. Ancient Egyptians used to worship onions. That's right, they believed their spherical shape and concentric rings symbolized eternal life. They also buried their dead with onions, figuring the strong smell might eventually wake them up again. In ancient Greece, athletes munched on onions because they thought it would lighten the weight of their blood. Remember, this was before no-carb diets. Roman gladiators were rubbed down with onions to firm up their muscles. Probably helped them slip out of tough bear hugs and sleeper holds, too. In the Middle Ages, onions were more valuable than a new jousting sword or decent moat subcontractor. People paid rent with onions and gave them as presents. Doctors prescribed them to move bowels, stifle coughs, and kill headaches. Seriously, imagine a big bag of onions wedged between the eye drops and skin cream at the drugstore. That's what it was most definitely like back then, I imagine. Anyway, given the illustrious past of the almighty onion, don't you feel like they don't score enough credit these days? We don't worship them like we used to, but maybe we should. After all, they're still cheap, healthy, and easy to store. Plus, they smell delicious, frying in a sizzling glob of butter with minced garlic on top. Seriously, when you walk into a house and smell onions and garlic frying, it's a beautiful moment. Partly because they smell great, partly because it means someone's cooking dinner, and partly because now you have to solve the mystery of what's cooking. It could be anything, really. Pierogies, sausages, curry, maybe a stir-fry? The point is that the house smells great, and you can't stop salivating. So, next time you're sniffing up that delicious aroma, just remember to stop for a second and think about the onion's proud and noble heritage, because they've come a long way
to be part of your dinner tonight. And they're happy to be here. Awesome.
Nailing a parallel parking attempt on the first try. Have you ever driven down a two-lane road with cars parallel parked on both sides and a long line driving in front of you and behind you? I have. And let me tell you, it's a terrible feeling. Most of the time, I'd rather drive right by a good parking spot than face the audience. That group of cars driving behind me and strangers beside me that stop to briefly witness the awkward reality show known as anyone else's parallel parking attempt. Yeah, my stomach knots up, and I lose confidence in my abilities to pull it off. I know the drivers behind me aren't just watching me either. No, they're judging me too, since the quality of my parking has a direct effect on the length of their drive. If I'm terrible, they wait, and they know it. They stare at me coldly, locking glances tightly with mine through the rearview mirror, daring me to pull it off. Then, finally, I give it a go in one of two ways. 1. The driving school method. This is where you really don't pay much attention to your car or the space you have to fit into. You just follow the book. Pull up beside the car in front of the spot, put it in reverse, and spin the wheel until you're 45 degrees out into the intersection. And then keep backing up while quickly spinning the wheel the other way really fast. If all went well, you should end up in the spot perfectly. Then again, this method is equivalent to building a bookshelf using the instructions only, without pausing to evaluate your work throughout the process. You might just finish and then stare up at the crooked, unbalanced pile of plywood you just nailed together and wonder what went wrong. 2. The Advanced Spatial Skills Method. There's no rhyme or reason to this one. You don't do anything except size up the space and then fiddle and turn your wheel until you fit in. You're just really good at aiming a big piece of metal into a small square hole. You'll go in any which way, and then, presto magico, finished. Simple as that. People who can do this amaze me. I cannot do this. No, for me, it's the driving school method all the way. I have no choice. Of course, I usually do something wrong, like drive onto the sidewalk or end up a good 3 feet away from the curb. If I'm 3 feet away, I try frantically to drive into the spot with an awkward 12-point turn, failing to properly understand the impossibility of this move each time. Eventually, I just give up and speed off, fleeing the scene and distancing myself from this horrible embarrassment as quickly as possible. I guess that's what makes it so great when you actually do nail that parallel parking job on the first try. When you pop into the spot perfectly and tightly, like a battery clicking into a remote control, you get a huge high. A smile reveals itself on your face, and there's an extra spring in your step. Cars behind you zoom ahead, happy to keep moving, a little upset you got the spot, and they didn't. And once in a while, if you're really lucky, an old guy will barrel roll out of the nearby barbershop, extend his hand, and say, "Sonny, now that was impressive." Awesome.
The Perfect Chicken Wing Partner. There are two kinds of chicken wings. First up, there's the baby drumstick. You know the one. It's a cute little baby drumstick slathered in wing sauce. It's the photo attachment you'd expect to see on a "We had a baby" email sent to you from a couple buckets of fried chicken. Then there are flat pats. Think of it this way. If baby drumsticks are the thick, meaty bicep wings, then flat pats are the forearms. Like a forearm, they've got two bones, which means you have to tear them apart to get at the tasty meat inside. Don't dismiss flat pats, though. Even though they may not have the baby drumstick's sex appeal, they come through in the clutch. Now, some people prefer baby drumsticks. Others go for the flat pats. Just like some people like their wing sauce mild, some like medium, and some say, go suicide or go home. But people, that's where the perfect wing partner comes in. He or she is that special someone who likes the exact same sauce as you, but the exact opposite wing type. You like medium? Perfect, so does she. What, you're a baby drumstick kind of guy? Great, she's into flat pats all the way. Face it, while you two are chowing down and enjoying your sticky late-night bar food, there's a good chance you'll both glance up at the same time, your sauce-soaked chins glimmering under the neon beer signs, and know, right then, right there, that you've just met your perfect chicken wing partner for life. Awesome.
Discovering those little tabs on the side of the aluminum foil box. Put your hand up if you've ever accidentally yanked the entire roll of aluminum foil out of the box when you were trying to swipe a small slice. My brother, if your hand is up right now, you are not alone. See, I'm a bit clumsy in the kitchen. My oven burners are covered in burnt sauce stains. My sink drains are full of slithery rainbow-colored bits of last night's dinner. And my cupboard of really, really old Tupperware looks like a plastic factory exploded. Add to these issues my apparent love of yanking entire sheets of aluminum foil clear out of the box. Honestly, I just give a little tug and out pops the entire roll, hitting the floor and rolling away while laughing its crackly metallic laugh. Yeah, tell me that's not a pathetic scene. Cut to freeze frame of tired-looking man in bedhead and sweatpants, holding an edge of aluminum foil in one hand and an empty box in the other, then slowly pan down to a floor covered in a thick, shiny snake of crinkled metal. The only thing that looks worse is the fat, crumpled, rolled-back-up roll stuffed in the box when I try to put it together again. Yes, we've all been there. But guess what? High tens around the room because there is hope for people like us. Shockingly, I have recently discovered those little tabs on the side of the aluminum foil box that hold the roll in place. Believe it, food preservation fans, because they truly exist. Yes, the little tabs on the side of the aluminum foil box can be indented so they anchor the roll in the box. Honestly, it's a jaw-dropping discovery, like finding $10 in your winter jacket, a secret pocket in your old blazer, or a long-lost son you thought died in a stormy shipwreck. Now, whenever it was, whenever it is, whenever it will be, how good does it feel when you first discover those little tabs yourself? Give it up for a pretty good buzz. So join me today as we give thanks to that modern miracle of the kitchen cupboard. Those little tabs on the side of the aluminum foil box. Awesome!
Your favorite old comfy t-shirt. Sure, maybe the collar's stretched, the iron-on's wearing off, and a moth ate a few holes in the back. But how good does that translucent, tight-fitting second skin feel when you squeeze into it and rock it down the street? Awesome.
The smell of freshly cut grass. Freshly cut grass smells like twilight in the countryside, a football game about to start at the park, or a sunny Saturday morning in the suburbs. So whether you're driving down a dusty farm road while the sun sets, stretching before the whistle blows, or putting your lawnmower back in the shed after crisscrossing your lot, just stop for a second. Tip your head back real far and take a big whiff, baby. Awesome.
A long hug when you really need it. Sometimes we all get rattled when bad news surprises you, painful memories flash back, or heavy moments turn your stomach to mush. It's great to fall into a warm and comforting pair of big, wide open arms. Shaking with sobs, dripping with tears, you snort up your runny nose and smear snot across their shoulders as that hug relaxes you and comforts you and helps you get through everything. Even for a minute. Even for a moment. Maybe there are "it's going to be okay" whispers, some gentle back rubbing, or just the quiet silence of knowing that they're not going to let go until you let go first. As their steady arms support you and the pain washes over you, the hug gives you a warm glow in a shivery moment. So when you eventually pull back, smile that classic, "I'm sorry and thank you" smile, and swipe wet bangs off your forehead, you still might not feel great, but if you're lucky, you'll feel a little more awesome.
A good floss after a tough steak. How bad was the first steak you ever made? I hope it was better than the charred shoe I served for dinner after 40 minutes of grilling. Needless to say, I made sure there wasn't anything too raw in the middle there. Nothing too tasty either. Of course, the worst part about a tough steak is how it haunts you for the rest of the evening in the form of tough, stringy bits of beef wedged tightly between your teeth. No matter how hard you twist and turn your tongue, sometimes they don't budge. That's when you have to bring in the big guns. Yes, that beautiful pack of floss should do the job just fine, thank you very much. So yank a piece out, snap a piece off, and get down to business. Flecks of chomped up beef bits are released from tight molar death grips as your teeth enjoy a tiny moment of sweet relief. Awesome.
Dangling your feet in water. Feet need to breathe. We already mentioned how your corny paws are sitting ugly at the bottom of the U-chain. Stepped on, squished on, dripping with sweat. They're down low all day, getting no love and no respect. So give them a well-deserved break. Peel those socks off, roll the jeans up, and flash them ankles, because it's time to drop your bare, aching feet into some cool water. So, whether it's the gentle lapping on the edge of the dock, soft waves bouncing at the side of the boat, or fountains raining in a public pool, the calming and soothing feeling is good for the soul and good for the souls. Awesome.
Salt. You're here because of salt. Honestly, salt's ability to preserve food was a foundation of civilization. People figured they could take their food with them and skipped town with a lunch bag to see what was over the hills. Salt affected where roads were built, cities were constructed, and kingdoms flourished. Get this. During the Roman Empire, caravans of up to 40,000 camels would mosey 400 miles through the Sahara Desert and trade salt for slaves at market. In the 1500s, a vast Polish empire rose because of salt mines there, but was wiped out when Germans figured out how to make sea salt instead. Salt caused wars and ended them, with armies salting the earth before they left to really mess up their enemies' gardens. Yes, salt was so valuable that it was used as currency. Even the word salary was derived from the Latin word salarium, which means money given to soldiers so they could buy salt. These days, salt costs a dollar and is available everywhere salt is sold. Sure, we've dumped it on dusty shelves at the back of the grocery store and preached about its terrible health effects in fitness magazines. But let me just say straight up that nothing can take away Salt's mojo, because here we go. 1. The lady, she brings the iodine. Health organizations suggest sucking back 150 micrograms of iodine a day to keep fit and have fun. Unless you're eating a lot of seaweed or fresh fish, the best way to pick this up is iodized salt. Sadly, the World Health Organization said in 2007 that more than 2 billion people have iodine deficiency, which results in thick goiters on the neck and stunted physical and mental growth. Not awesome. 2. Taste the rainbow. Have you ever tossed salt in a stir-fry of bland vegetables? Buddy, now you're talking. When you add salt, the flavors all have a coming-out party to celebrate. And thanks to salt's powers of preservation, you can enjoy your food long after harvest. 3. Fights ice real nice. Those of us from the snowy side of the planet know ice patches on roads and sidewalks are slippery death traps. But kind, giving salt, always there, always ready, busts up those death sheets without hesitation. 4. It's dirt cheap. Nobody gets top dollar for salt at the market anymore. Nowadays, a handful of warm quarters scores you a year's supply. 5. Never quits its day job. Salt has a host of other uses. You gargle with it to help sore throats. Big companies use it to set dyes, keep things dry, and make soaps and shampoos. Plus, if you've ever had a giant leech sucking on your neck, you know that tossing some salt in its face usually gets the job done. Life sure would be bland without salt. So people please, if you have a moment, just sit back and remember that salt's come a long way to be here today. And we've come a long way because of it. Awesome.
When you know all the buttons to speed through the automated telephone system. If you've called your work voicemail system or local phone company so many times that you know how to jump through all the hoops to get right where you want, then you can press 1 for being awesome.
Laughing so hard, you make no sound at all.
Awesome!
When you nudge the person snoring next to you, and it makes them stop. Just tap your elbow in the rib cage a bit. Maybe pat the belly. Or, if you're feeling particularly brave, give a kick to the back of the knees while loudly whispering "shh" in his ears. If that still doesn't work, it's time to roll him on over. But don't worry. If he wakes up, it will only last a second, and he'll never remember it tomorrow. Awesome.
The sound of ice cubes cracking in a drink. This is the sound of your drink getting colder. It's the final moment in the sweet series of noises that get you ready for the first sip. First, there's the glass clinking on the countertop, the crack and psh of the soda can opening, the glug, glug, glug pour, the snapping of the ice cube tray, and the quiet bloop, bloop of the cubes dropping in your drink. These opening acts make way for the big show that is the loud, satisfying sound of ice cubes cracking and splitting. As you smile and see your glass frosting up, it's time to give a little swirl and take the first sip. Awesome.
Solving the Wheel of Fortune puzzle before the people on the show. Sure, most of the time they beat you to the punch, but Once in a while, you manage to get in there and shout it out before they're done buying a vowel. Screaming out the right answer is great because it means you're smarter than three random people on TV. And since at the time you're gorging on a plate of cookies on the couch with your eyelids half drooped, this is a pretty good feeling. We'll take it. Awesome.
When the guy at the border doesn't ask any questions. Crossing the border is stressful. Long lines, heavy fines, interview questions, passport inspections. And through it all, you're hoping you don't get an angry customs guy on a power trip. After all, you're completely at his mercy. Unzipping your suitcase, quizzing you on your itinerary, all is fair game. If you're like me, you get nervous and feel like you might mess up an answer to a question you really do know and sound like you're lying as a result.
What's the purpose of your trip, sir?
What? Sorry. I'm just going to Chicago?
Please come with me.
That's why nothing beats the wave through. Customs guy, when you deliver that muted two-finger keep-going wave, we're loving you lots. Thanks for letting us in. Awesome.
Really, really selling it while barbecuing. That thick, smoky barbecue smell floats through the yard, and everybody starts salivating for dinner. Yes, sizzling sides of beef and black burnt wieners are coming right up as the sun's dropping, the party's hopping, and your friends are all chilling with ice-cracking drinks on your backyard patio. And if you're in charge of grilling up dinner, then there aren't many things that scream, "I'm serious about this," more than really, really selling it to all your friends. Oh sure, some things come close, such as owning a shiny oversized 9-piece barbecue tool set and having it folded open on the picnic table. Not leaving the barbecue at any point, and even holding on to the handle when the lid is down to make sure nobody attempts to flip burgers when you aren't looking. Wearing a giant apron with your name on it. Asking everybody constant questions at all times, such as, "Did you say medium or medium well?" And, "You're toasted! You're toasted! You're untoasted, right?" Yeah, don't get me wrong. All those things shout, "I'm serious about this," too. But nothing quite screams it like really, really selling it to the crowd. You know what I'm talking about, if you've ever hammed it up with any of these classic moves. "Dog up, I got a dog up, who wants a dog?" "Come on, Andrew, you're not eating salad, are you? Come on, how many more can I sign you up for? Two at least." Walking around the deck with raised eyebrows, holding a cold cheeseburger on your barbecue flipper, and occasionally waggling it in someone's face. "Okay, I got a slightly burnt one. Who likes them nice and crispy? Nice and crispy one here, everybody. Nice and crispy." Yes, if you're getting your barbecue groove on strong and you're rocking the sales pitch long, then kudos to you. Every deck party needs somebody to tell everybody else to eat more burgers. So today we salute you for embracing the job. You sold it. We bought it. And now we're all feeling stuffed, bloated, and so completely awesome.
Locking people out of the car and pretending to drive away. There are so many different levels to this classic gag. There's version 1.0, which involves a car full of people, a gas station bathroom break, the locked door, and the slow rolling drive away while the victim knocks on the window and pretends not to care. Yes, victims have to avoid giving drivers the frustrated reactions they're looking for here. Folks, this is locking people out of the car and pretending to drive away light. A tame version of the gag intended to induce a few giggles without any tense moments. Just some G-rated comic relief for the long drive home. Version 1.0 is the most commonly practiced out there and the officially recommended version by the Book of Awesome. Next up is something a bit more advanced than version 1.0, but not quite at the level of version 2.0. We'll call it version 1.5, also known as the Big Tease. Now, the Big Tease works as long as the victim leaves his car door open. That open door is critical to pull it off. To execute, the driver simply waits until the victim is approaching the car and then drives away slowly with the door hanging wide open like a big tease. This works fine on small or large cars, but is especially effective in vans with sliding doors. You've got that big van door just sitting there wide open, and the victim may figure it's worth running and jumping for it. There's really no telling what could happen in this situation. Just remember to be safe out there. Next comes version 2.0, which involves a car full of people, a gas station bathroom break, the locked door, then a complete driveway, lap of the gas station, and return after a minute or two. Big difference here is that version 2.0 dials up the fear notch a little, instills a bit of boot shake in our helpless victim. When the car comes back, some name-calling goes down, but nothing too serious. Still, this one's not recommended for children 12 and under. Let's call it rated T for teen. And then, finally, there's the granddaddy of them all. The one and only version 3.0. A real cooker. Version 3.0 involves a car full of people, a gas station bathroom break, the locked door, then a full-out driveway into the sunset without any eventual return. The victim is left curbside, casually licking an ice cream cone and walking around for a couple minutes, expecting the car to come sweeping around the corner any second now. But no, the car never comes back. Unless practiced within walking distance of the victim's house, version 3.0 can be devastating. And it's rarely executed and not recommended for obvious reasons. Its potential to destroy relationships. To destroy relationships forever. Awesome.
The sound of rain from inside the tent. Okay, straight up. You know those big kettle drums you see in the symphony? The ones being pounded with padded drumsticks by a bald guy in a tuxedo? Well, the sound of rain from inside the tent is like living in a kettle drum. Now, let's be honest. The best thing about the sound of rain from inside the tent is that it means you're inside the tent, not outside in a wet t-shirt on your mud-splattered hands and knees, trying to hammer some plastic stakes into the mushy ground. Yes, putting up a tent in the rain is pretty high up there in The Book of Annoying, a non-existent nether list that also features walking into spider webs. When you realize you're out of deodorant as you're putting it on, when someone says the punchline to the joke you're telling, and forgetting your umbrella at the restaurant. The sound of rain from inside the tent feels safe, secure, and comforting. After all, you're out in the elements, safe from the elements. You'll get the marshmallow roasting sticks later. You'll build a fire tomorrow. But for now, it's time to lie on the bumpy sleeping bag, put your hands behind your head, and just enjoy the noise. Awesome.
When you arrive at the bus stop, just as the bus is coming around the corner. Thin, flimsy plastic sheets propped up on wobbly rods shudder in the wind as the sleet shoots sideways and you shiver and shake in the dark and lonely bus shelter. Wrapped in thin gloves and a thick, wet scarf, you stand patiently as your book-filled backpack silently jabs your spine and strains your shoulders. Fingers freezing, knees shaking, you wince and hug yourself as you keep looking way up the street, wishing, hoping, praying that you'll please, please see the bus heading right for you. We've all been there, and it's not a pretty scene. But hey, that's what makes it so great when you hit one of those magic moments when you arrive at the bus stop just as the bus peels out from around the corner. Pupils dilate, eyebrows rise, and a clown-faced smile curls onto your face as you realize you just hit the public transportation jackpot. Yes, in those perfect scenes, you're suddenly a bus fleet fat cat, swimming in tickets and tokens, commanding your private army of sugar rollers around town to pick you up and drop you off as you see fit. Baby, if you're feeling this buzz, then there's no reason you can't get right into it, too. Whistling with both pinkies just before it stops, or clapping your hands beside your ear twice as if you're hailing it for real. And how perfect is it when this dream scene ends with the bus stopping right in front of you, the door swinging open, and the bright, round-faced driver flashing you a big, toothy smile, a tip of the cap, and a wink as you walk in the door? Awesome.
That last crummy triangle in a bag of potato chips. Kickstarting a bag of potato chips is pretty much standard. You open with the double pincher squeeze and pop technique, start fishing out the prime, full-bodied chips at the top of the heap, and then work your way down to the half-broken chips in the middle of the bag. A few minutes in, you've chomped your way down to the bottom, and you might think you're pretty much done. But wait, that's just the beginning. That's when you get to the best part. That's when you get to the last crummy triangle of potato chips, wedged right in the corner of the bag. You know what I'm talking about. Usually at this point, your lips and face are covered in grease crumbs, and your fingers are neon orange, coated in a thin film of salty saliva. That delicious patch of potato powder is all yours, but to get it, you have to get a bit dirty. First of all, you won't be able to see your fingers down that crinkly, mirrory well, so you have to tilt the bag sideways and size up that crummy triangle for what it's worth. See what you're dealing with here. Commit to a game plan. Next, even though your fingers might already be wet at this point, it's best to be safe with the old thumb and index finger pre-lick. Come on, slide them right in and out of your mouth. Don't be shy. Remember, the crumbs are in there deep, and your slightly sticky spit glue will help mine the greasy plunder. Next, attack. Wedge your wet thumb and forefinger in there hard, and squeeze until you feel like you've got most of it. Then pull out quick, and in one swift move, sweep and drop that last crummy triangle right onto your tongue, making sure to lick the stubborn remains off your fingers while saying, mmm, a lot. Now, while the thumb and index corner pinch move is gritty and explosive, there is a backup technique that will still get the job done if you don't like to get your hands dirty. Those in the biz know what I'm talking about. The dump truck bag tilt maneuver. This one requires two hands, a gaping mouth, and a 45-degree angle to turn the trick. You can use it alone or in tandem. But either way, almost entirely composed of salt and artificial flavor, that last crummy triangle packs a full-flavor finishing move. Unlike the watered-down sip at the end of a soft drink cup, the stump at the bottom of a muffin, or the tooth-breaking kernels hiding in that last handful of popcorn. Awesome.
Bowling celebrations. Because let's be honest, most people are pretty stinking awful at rolling a ball the size and weight of a human head perfectly straight down a 60-foot lane. There are gutters on both sides. You're slipping in torn-up shoes that have been through a war and a washing machine. And every time you go up for a toss, you're up on stage with critical eyes piercing holes in your back, watching your every move. It's pressure, all right. But that's what makes it so great when you finally pick up a perfect spare or nail a 10-pin knockdown in the final frame. That's when it's time for a bowling celebration, ideally featuring several of the following. 1. The stage dance. Hey, you're up on stage, so why not throw out a couple of moves? Perhaps the famous Hulk Hogan ear cup, the invisible hula hoop, or the fist pump. If all else fails, you can moonwalk back down to your seat. The shoes should help. 2. The celebrity. The paparazzi loves you, and you love them back. Only without the paparazzi. Smile, wink, and pose for the invisible cameras on your way back to the orange plastic seats. 3. The all-business, around-the-world high-five. This can happen when you have around 10 hands to slap. There are just too many hands, so your eyes narrow, your eyebrows crunch, and your tongue fixes itself on your top lip as you focus on nailing every single high-five offered to you. You don't miss a slap. Yes, you're all business around the world. 4. The overly exaggerated jump. Always a fan favorite. Just watch out for that greasy floor and those skiddy shoes. 5. The friendly stranger. This is where a casual stranger who has been keeping a passive eye on your game suddenly leaves his lane and jumps into your bowling celebration. The friendly stranger can be awkward, but it gives your sweet roll some extra lane cred. Now, whatever your style, it's important to remember that once you hit down some pins, it's all about the bowling celebration. You can do no wrong at this point, so just relax and do a little dance. Make a little love, and get down tonight. Awesome.
Slicing open a taped-up box with a set of keys or a pen. Don't worry about finding a knife or a pair of scissors because MacGyver's in the house. Awesome.
Sitting next to someone good-looking on a plane.
Sure, you know how it goes. Belly gets rounder, head gets balder, and that hunch starts poking out the top of your coat. If you're young, don't worry, because those years in the sun and those years having fun might hurt your beauty, but they can't hurt your pride. Take it from us. We're all going to get old one day, so let's just love the age we've got and let's not crave the age we're not. Amen! Sing it to your mama. And while we're all smiling and climbing that slow stairway to heaven, golf and grandkids, I say, there's nothing wrong with crossing our fingers and hoping for a cute seatmate on that next flight to Florida. Because Grandpa's got a sideways stare, and Grandma doesn't mind peeking either. Oh, I know what you're thinking. When we get old, we're the mature, refined, wise old sages of society. We're above enjoying the company of some pleasant eye candy with a sweet smile for a few hours up in the sky, right? Speak for yourself, chump. Awesome.
When you manage to squeeze out enough toothpaste for one last brush. Say you wake up Monday morning and realize you forgot to set your alarm clock. Now, not only did you miss some quality snooze time, but you're late for work to boot. You jump out of bed, jump on the toilet, jump in the shower, jump into some clothes, and run to the bathroom to brush your teeth before running out the door. But then you see it. That thin, rolled-up toothpaste tube lying completely empty on your counter. The life squeezed out of it over the past few weeks. Your jaw drops and your memory shoots back. You vividly recall making the first dent in the tube's soft, cylindrical purity, back when the paste was flowing like water, just itching to flood out. It seemed like it would never end. Over the next few weeks, there were some great moments, like the time you forgot to put the lid on and had to squeeze real hard through a tiny pinprick hole in the center of the congealed toothpaste wall the next day. The first time you had to roll it up, coiling the thick, once mighty toothpaste anaconda into a tightly wound fraction of itself. This was foreshadowing, but the paste kept flowing, so you thought nothing of it. The time you actually thought you were out of toothpaste, but managed to unroll it and slide it real hard across the edge of your bathroom counter, completely coaxing all the minty green molecules up to the front door. You smile slightly at foggy memories of better days before your brain quickly jerks you forward to the present, which is right now when you're late for work. You stare into your empty tube of toothpaste, glance quickly at your watch, and decide to just go for it one last time. You grab your brush, grit your teeth, and squeeze your thumb and forefinger together as hard as you can, right on the head of the tube. You squeeze and squeeze and squeeze and squeeze, your thumb pounding, your brow pulsing, your brush pleading, until it finally comes, that very last, very weak, very small dot of toothpaste, peeking its head out the toothpaste tube tip just in time for you to swipe it with your brush, swish it around your mouth, and spit it out. Awesome.
Using Q-tips the way you're not supposed to use them. Yes, I'm talking about rubbing and twisting that cottony Q-tip tip right inside your ear canal. Get in there deep where it doesn't belong. Because it's like an amazing, satisfying inner ear massage. Also, the more dark, waxy, and disgusting the Q-tip is when you're done, the more satisfying it is. Am I right? Because then, on top of the inner ear massage, you get a killer. Whoa, that just came out of me? High, too. For those keeping track at home, that's two highs for the price of one. Not a bad deal. Now, I know what you're thinking. How could we possibly advocate doing something so terribly dangerous like pushing a hard, pointy object against your fragile eardrum? I mean, the box itself says right on it, "Do not insert swab into ear canal. Entering the ear canal could cause injury." But come on, we all do it. And we know we probably shouldn't. It's dangerous and unnecessary and risky and illegal and against all common sense. But it feels so good. Awesome.
Watching The Price is Right when you're at home sick. At an early age, it is possible to learn the price of life through The Price is Right. How many 8-year-olds know a can of chickpeas costs 89 cents? How many 12-year-olds can rattle off the features of a new solid oak armoire? And how many 14-year-olds can estimate the value of an ice cream maker, new speedboat, set of maracas, and a trip to Puerto Rico? Well, I'll tell you who, man. Any kid with the flu. See, The Price is Right is great when you're sick, because it comes on at 11 a.m., which is about the time your enthusiasm for missing school is sort of deflating into a boring day on the couch with a stomach ache. By mid-morning, whoever is taking care of you has either headed upstairs or thrown a blanket on you and gone grocery shopping. You feel too sick to do much of anything, so you just lie on the couch and flip channels endlessly, trying to understand why there's nothing good on TV. Then finally, as you've finished counting cracks in the ceiling, tried and failed to legally nap several times, and mindlessly gobbled down a pack of saltines, the clock strikes 11 a.m., and it's time for the show. That's when the music starts kicking, the lights start flashing, and it's time to come on down, because it's The Price is Right, baby. So sing it with me, and let's get in the game. It's just such a great time. And you know, I think it really helps that everybody on The Price is Right is just so happy. People are running and jumping, laughing and screaming, and they're all wearing homemade t-shirts to boot. Basically, they feel the exact opposite of how you feel, and it's sort of contagious. The Price is Right is one massive climax of games, prizes, and tuna fish ads. But you find yourself cheering along and guessing the price of that leather ottoman, yelling for the big wheel to stop on $1, and crossing your fingers for the announcer to unveil a game of Plinko. Or, yes, a new car! And yeah, I know it's different now, but come on. For how many years did The Price is Right represent some solid, rock-like consistency in this mad, 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 mad world? There was Rod Roddy's sequined blazer, the wild panning camera looking for the next contestant, Bob Barker's skinny microphone, and the shots of the family and the audience madly screaming advice to help our hapless contestant win a four-piece bedroom set. It just never changed. And so, whether you were 6 with the chicken pox, 9 with the flu, 12 with a broken arm, or 15 with menstrual cramps, you could count on 60 solid minutes with the company of that old 70s set, lots of $1 bets, and advice to neuter your pet, all crunched into the best sick day game show yet. Awesome.
That one square in the waffle that's the most loaded with butter and syrup. Oh, you know the one. It's full to the brim with a melty smear of butter and drenched in a puddle of thick syrup. Good move, saving it for last. Awesome.
Rain hair. You know when you get caught in the rain and your fabulous hairdo turns into a wet, frizzy mess? Well, I say that's a good thing, because hear me out. Let's talk about how much time, money, and effort we put into the managing and upkeep of our golden locks of dead skin cells. How about a lot? Now, don't get me wrong. I play the game too. I wash my hair, condition it up, gel it up, shake it up. I prepare it for the day and check in periodically to see how it's doing. Any rogue locks, fallen bangs, what's new in the slowly going bald corners? How's that back of the neck beard coming in this month? I spend too much time on it, and my hair still looks like a squirrel that's been run over on the highway for a few weeks. Our pals over at Wikipedia make hair sound like the sun or fresh water, saying in their snooty tone that head hair has gained an important significance in nearly all present societies as well as any given historical period throughout the world. But then again, those lovable eggheads can make anything sound pretty serious. It's just hair, after all. I say, maybe the army got it right when they instituted crew cuts after World War I trench warfare gave everyone lice and fleas. Maybe there's something to be said about the no-maintenance plan, the low-maintenance plan, or the no plan at all. Because whenever I walk by someone with hair just flying everywhere, all unkempt and full of knots, dirty dreads, and dead leaves, I get jealous, for a second. Think of the free time they have. I mean, sure, they stick out, but what if we all got in the game? Then maybe everyone's garden would look immaculate, gyms would get really crowded, and libraries would run out of books. We'd just have to put up with all these shaggy, scraggly Sasquatches walking around. That's all. And that's what I kind of like about rain hair. It's a temporary escape from the hair prison we live in. When everyone shows up at the movies or mall with wet and frizzy flyaways, hair matted to their foreheads and hairspray dripping and stinging their eyes, it's like, yeah, we all look like a mess. But that rain sure does wash away expectations, too. Awesome.
Neighbors with pools. Hey there, neighbor. Thanks a lot for paying for that massive, expensive pool. Great job installing it, heating it, chlorinating it, vacuuming it, and skimming it. You sure it's cool if I take you up on that offer to swing by for a quick dip? Awesome!
When you actually remember the name of someone you met earlier at the party. I have a problem. Within seconds of meeting somebody, I completely forget their name. Sure, I introduce myself, shake hands, and jump right into conversation, but I can't fully concentrate because I realize their name has immediately disappeared from my memory. Cursing myself, I silently scan my frontal lobe, but my pink and lumpy mush is bright white and empty. So I smile and nod along, but inside I'm frustrated. And it's even worse when they use my name right away. "So, Neil, where are you from?" they'll ask innocently, but I'm too busy combing through